Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. We hope you're all having a happy and safe Thanksgiving weekend, and if you're traveling, folks, please use caution, since a winter storm continues to batter our region. The storm has blanketed local mountains with snow, with up to several feet forecast to accumulate at higher elevations by the end of the holiday weekend, and snow as low as 3,000 feet or below. Elsewhere across the county, heavy rains and high tides along the coast are bringing localized flooding, and to our north, travelers, be aware that Interstate 5 is closed over the Grapevine due to snow as we record our show on Friday afternoon. On today's show, we have some big local news stories, including details on the arrest of the former Rancho San Diego Sheriff's Captain, Marco Garmo, on gun trafficking charges, along with jeweler Leo Hamill and others. Out in Lemon Grove, the City Council will be hearing from applicants to fill a council vacancy this coming week. Hear who's applied on today's show. In Julian, the county fire authority run by CAL FIRE has hauled away the last remaining equipment from the former Julian Volunteer Firefighters Station, including fire trucks and an ambulance with four-wheel drive, even taking firewood gathered to help the poor. Hear why some in the community are concerned over their safety. Also, before you make your next salad, listen up for news about a recall on romaine lettuce. Our newsmaker interviews today are with Jeffrey Arneo and David Bennett from the U.S. Census Office in San Diego. They're looking to hire hundreds of people for local jobs, and we'll have details along with what you should know about changes to the 2020 census. On Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up, including holiday festivities with snow sledding, ice skating, carriage rides, a parade of lights, and more festive fun. Then on Green Scene, hear how you can recycle your cooking oil and grease after your Thanksgiving feast and year-round. On People Power, learn how you can help brighten the holiday season for military families' children in La Mesa. We'll also have some winter safety tips and tips for choosing your holiday tree on today's show. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Gerald Stevenson with a Crime Beat Report. Former San Diego Sheriff's Captain Marco Garmo has been arrested and charged with running an illegal firearms trafficking operation, at times from his office at the Rancho San Diego Station with the help of others, including a fellow sheriff's deputy. The indictment also charges Lieutenant Fred Magana, prominent San Diego jeweler Leo Hamill, firearms dealer Giovanni Talota, and El Cajon resident Y.L. Anton, with aiding and abetting Garmo's illegal firearms business. Magana and Hamill entered guilty pleas in federal court, admitting that they had aided Garmo's business through straw purchases of firearms, creating false records to conceal those purchases, and offering to promote Garmo's weapons. Both Magana and Hamill are out of jail after paying bail bonds and are set for sentencing on February 21st. Anton was arrested and Talota remains at large. Garmo was a sheriff's deputy for almost 27 years until September 20, 2019, serving as the captain in charge of the Rancho San Diego Station until search warrants were served as part of this investigation when he was removed from command. The indictment alleges that Garmo was engaged in unlawful firearms dealings during his entire tenure as captain of the Rancho San Diego Station. Garmo is also accused of tipping off his cousin, who is a partner in an illegal marijuana dispensary, about an impending warrant search. The indictment indicates Garmo dealt in illegal firearms for both financial profit and to cultivate future donors for his anticipated campaign for sheriff of San Diego County. Most of Garmo's firearms transactions involve the alleged purchase and resale of off-roster handguns that may be purchased by law enforcement members, but not the public. Garmo received a warning from the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that excessive resales for profit could violate federal law. He acquired roughly 146 firearms over 6 years, then sold or transferred 104 of them to others, according to a state database. Peter Mazza, assistant U.S. attorney, says this office will not tolerate public servants who abuse their positions of trust for personal gain. Law enforcement members who step outside of the law are subject to the same standards as everyone else in our community. As part of his guilty plea, Leo Hamill, the owner of Leo Hamill Fine Jewelers, admitted to purchasing off-roster handguns from Garmo and engineered a series of straw purchases in which Garmo would falsely certify that he was acquiring an off-roster gun for himself when in truth he was buying it for Hamill. Hamill further admitted that he acquired several firearms from Garmo without proper documentation through bogus long-term firearm loans in exchange for money, which were sales in all but name. Hamill agreed in his plea to conducting straw purchases with Garmo and other defendants to construct a false paper trail to make it appear that the straw purchases were illegitimate. As part of his guilty plea, Hamill has also agreed to forfeit over 200 firearms and 100,000 rounds of ammunition seized from him in a February raid. Giovanni Zalota, the owner of Honey Badger Firearms, is accused of accepting and submitting falsified firearms records. The indictment further alleges that Zalota sold firearms inside Garmo's captain's office at the Rancho San Diego station. Lieutenant Magana admitted in his plea agreement that he made straw purchases of off-roster guns for Hamill at Garmo's direction. Magana also admitted offering to advertise Garmo's firearms to potential customers, but to keep Garmo's name out of it until he found a buyer willing to close the deal. YL Anton is accused of aiding and abetting Garmo's unlicensed firearms dealing by helping Garmo's buyers apply for permits to carry concealed weapons as part of Anton's consulting business. Anton allegedly received cash payments from his clients and then paid a kickback to Garmo for referrals. Anton is also accused of paying a cash bribe to a staff member who processed concealed carry weapons permits to get early appointments for his clients. In addition, Anton is charged with obstruction of justice for repeatedly urging one of his consulting clients, in reality an undercover agent, to lie to federal investigators about that cash payment after a search of Anton's home revealed evidence. Garmo is also charged with aiding and abetting in drug distribution. As captain, he was responsible for policing unlicensed marijuana dispensaries in the Spring Valley area. The indictment alleges that Garmo tipped off owners at Campo Greens, including Garmo's cousin, of a warrant search at the illegal dispensary. As a result, the dispensary's workers emptied shelves and removed inventory and cash to avoid seizure by law enforcement. The indictment states that Garmo lied to federal agents, claiming he never tipped off the dispensary owners about the raid because he never would have put his deputies in harm's way. Sheriff Bill Gore says his department requested an investigation by the FBI and ATF after finding potential criminal conduct over 2 years ago. Sheriff Gore voiced disappointment in Captain Garmo and Lieutenant Magana. The sheriff says, "Acts such as these are a violation of public trust and tarnish the reputation of law enforcement." He adds, "The sheriff's department will not tolerate criminal behavior amongst its ranks and will hold its employees accountable for their actions." Sheriff Gore also says that he is, quote, "proud of the integrity and professionalism of our staff and the exemplary leadership shown by those within the sheriff's department who brought this case to light."
The Lemon Grove City Council will hold a special meeting on December 2nd at 6 p.m. to interview applicants to fill a vacancy on the City Council left by the resignation of Matt Mendoza. There are 8 applications, including from former City Council members George Gastel and Gerald Selby, who have experience in economic and redevelopment issues. Other applicants include Yadira Altamirano, a business owner and leader in a homeless ministry; Evelyn Andrade, the Development Director of Climate Action Campaign; Melanie Lucero, who has been active with Lemon Grove Heal Zone and other nonprofits; Kamal Martin with California Charter Schools Association, who has been active in many community activities, including the NAACP and Somali Youth United; Walter Oliwa, a special education teacher's aide; and Nu Tran, an SDG&E manager, past chair of San Diego Grantmaker, and past president of the Lemon Grove District PTA. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego Superior Court Judge Randa Trapp has dashed hopes of volunteers from the former Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District, or JCFPD, that the district will be resurrected anytime soon. On November 17th, Judge Trapp denied the motion filed back in April by JCFPD attorney Corey Briggs last April 10th, which sought to invalidate the dissolution of the Volunteer Fire and Medical Protection District ordered by the San Diego Local Area Formation Commission, or LAFCO. Within hours of Trapp's decision Friday, Briggs filed an appeal. Without waiting for the appellate court to consider that appeal, the County Fire Authority, operated by CAL FIRE, raided Julian Fire Station 56, the former volunteer station, and towed away or hauled off all remaining firefighting equipment, including fire engines and ambulances purchased by the Volunteer Firefighting District. Brian Kramer, past president of the Volunteer Firefighting District's board, says that at least some of the vehicles are being prepped for sale, and a water tender truck that had been purchased by the volunteers has already been sold and delivered to a fire district in Tennessee. Briggs called the action a raid. Some Julian residents cried at seeing their fire trucks and ambulances taken away, while others voiced anger. The action leaves Julian entirely dependent upon the county and CAL FIRE for protection. Despite grave concerns raised by many residents over serious gaps in equipment and coverage since the volunteer district was dissolved, CAL FIRE has not responded to our calls or emails. It is unclear why the agency did not keep the equipment to protect the Julian area, since the county and CAL FIRE promised residents that Julian would be safer with the county and CAL FIRE in charge. Nor is it clear why the equipment would not at least be held in reserve in case the volunteers win their appeal. Even vehicles with four-wheel drive were taken, despite complaints from Julian residents earlier this year that county and CAL FIRE vehicles in Julian lacked snow tires and that the county had not positioned a snowplow in Julian. CAL FIRE denied that any engine was stuck, prompting release of drone footage shot by a resident that appeared to show CAL FIRE engines stuck in deep snow. While volunteers were out clearing snowy roads blocked by a fallen tree last winter, thanks to a snowplow that they owned. We repeatedly asked CAL FIRE and Supervisor Diane Jacob if there are plans to provide a snowplow and or snow tires for vehicles operated by the county and CAL FIRE in the Julian area, but neither provided any promise to plug this obvious public safety gap. Even more frightening to residents of Julian and surrounding areas is the prospect of the community being left with no equipment at all when a fire occurs, a prospect that residents have long voiced concerns over. That scenario appears to have actually occurred during the Sade fire in Ramona. The Sade fire broke out, ironically, during Supervisor Jacob's town hall in Julian in late October, the anniversary of the Witch Creek and Cedar wildfires. As sirens wailed past, heading to Ramona some 30 miles away, the Volunteer Firefighting District's board chair, Mike Mangini, rose and announced that every piece of firefighting and medical equipment had been dispatched to the fire, leaving no one to respond if an emergency occurred in Julian. No one disputed his claim. We sent emails to CAL FIRE's public information officer and to Supervisor Jacob, asking what the county plans to do to prevent Julian from being left bare, meaning that the town has zero protection if a house fire, business fire, brush fire, or medical emergency were to occur. Jacob referred our inquiry to the County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE, which acknowledged receiving our email but never provided an answer. Also taken from the station were four breathing apparatus items belonging to another entity, the Julian Volunteer Fire Company Association. The association says that it intends to file a report with the San Diego County Sheriff Department on what it regards as a theft of its equipment. A CAL FIRE truck was even photographed by the Julian Times hauling away firewood that had been gathered to help people in need during the winter, on a day when snow blanketed the Julian area. In his motion, Briggs argued that the dissolution of the volunteer district was not valid because of a Brown Act violation committed by prior board members. The dissolution by LAFCO was hinged on a vote taken by that board, which excluded public input. Those board members were voted out and replaced in the next election. Trapp, in her ruling Friday, countered that LAFCO complied with all of the requirements in approving the dissolution, which came after voters in the district narrowly approved a ballot measure supporting the dissolution. But opponents contended the county's wording on the ballot measure was confusing. They also objected to not having a polling place in Julian for the election, which was conducted only by mail-in ballots. Another unresolved issue in this controversy is legal action taken by a Kumeyaay Land Trust group, which claims a clause in the deed that gave Station 56 to the Volunteer Firefighting District requires that the land be given back to the Native American group if the site ever ceases to be used as a fire station run by the all-volunteer Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District. The trust's attorney contends that the district abandoned the station, albeit against their will. Thus, a court must ultimately decide the fate of the station and the land on which it sits. East County Magazine sent Supervisor Jacob a set of detailed questions about concerns which had been expressed by the citizens at her recent town hall meeting in Julian. She did not answer any of the specifics, stating only, "Although the court's decision is being appealed, it's my hope the focus can now be on coming together as a community. Julian is a special place, and I know that we will get through this challenging period. All of us want the same thing, a safer, better protected Julian." But she provided no details on how to make a safer, better protected Julian with fewer fire trucks, ambulances, and locally based firefighters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Gene Carpenter with a health alert. Federal and state regulatory officials are investigating a multi-state outbreak of E. coli infections linked to romaine lettuce harvested from the Salinas, California growing region. At least 40 cases have been reported in 16 states, with 28 hospitalizations, including 5 patients who developed kidney failure. The Centers for Disease Control advises consumers not to eat any romaine lettuce harvested from the Salinas area. This includes whole heads of romaine, hearts of romaine, and packages of pre-cut lettuce or salad mixes containing romaine, including baby romaine, spring mix, and Caesar salad. If you're not sure where the lettuce was grown, throw it out. Wash and sanitize refrigerator drawers or shelves where romaine lettuce was stored. Retailers and restaurants should not sell or serve any romaine lettuce grown in the Salinas area, or any lettuce not labeled with a growing region. Mesa Bay LLC has issued a recall on salad products sold under many different brand names due to possible E. coli contamination. The recalled salad products have use-by dates ranging from October 29th to November the 1st. If you believe you may have eaten contaminated lettuce, talk to your healthcare provider. Write down what you ate in the week before you got sick and report your illness to your local health department. Wash your hands frequently to avoid spreading the illness. The investigation is ongoing to determine the source of contamination and if any other products are linked to this outbreak, which is caused by the same strain of E. coli that caused outbreaks linked to leafy greens in 2017 and to romaine lettuce in 2018.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guests are Jeffrey Arneo and David Bennett from the U.S. Census, the local office, and we're going to be talking about some jobs available through the census for the big count next year, why it's important to answer those questions, and everything else you need to know. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Miriam. This is Jeffrey Arneo, the San Diego Census Office, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Great.
Thank you so much, Miriam. This is David Bennett. I'm a media specialist for the San Diego Census, and I'm really excited to be here.
Let's start by talking about the census itself and why it's important. So can you tell us why it matters for everyone to participate in the census, why it's done, and how those results are used?
So Miriam, we're getting ready to do the decennial census. It's done every 10 years. And the importance of doing the census is to make sure everyone is counted, counted once, and in the right place. What does that mean? That simply means how much federal dollars are appropriated and distributed across the country to Puerto Rico and the overseas island territories. And it also determines how many representatives in the U.S. House of Representatives get apportioned to each state.
Yeah, and Miriam, I'd just like to add to that, this David, is that the way people can kind of think about it is we residents use the census to support community initiatives involving legislations, quality of life, consumer advocacy. What that boils down to, that's roads, that's healthcare, that's after-school lunches. So a lot of that kind of boils down to real fundamental ways of making East County even better.
Yeah, it even can be used in reapportioning districts for things like school districts and city councils, for example, if there is a majority-minority district that needs to be carved out because of a lot of folks of one particular ethnicity. It's used for that too, is it not?
It is. It's not just the representatives in the U.S. House of Representatives, but we actually use the data from the decennial census to determine the school districts.
Mm-hmm. And money for housing, things like that, homelessness, all those things?
That is correct.
Yeah, Marion, that's correct. The more we know about our communities, and the more that the state government knows about the communities and what they're comprised of, the better they can plan. If there's a higher population of seniors, then we can have a senior center where it needs to be. If there's a large growing population of young families, let's get some schools there. So it really helps the community plan itself and prepare and fund for it.
Okay, very good. So it's certainly important to answer those questions when you get it in the mail or if a census taker comes to your door, folks. Now, let's talk about the census itself and what questions are on it and how that might be different from past years. I'd like to start by asking about citizenship. I remember there was a big controversy recently over whether or not a citizenship question should be added to the census for 2020. And how did that ultimately work out?
The United States Supreme Court decided not to include the citizenship question on the next decennial census in 2020. And I also want to just reiterate that all the information provided by everyone living in the United States when conducting the census, this information is protected by the U.S. Census Bureau. We do not share this information. Only statistical data is taken from this information.
So not a person's name. So even if somebody had someone who was, say, undocumented living in the household, they don't need to worry that this information could be shared with ICE or that someone could be deported because of answering the question.
That is correct. Under Title 13, we are obligated to protect the personally identifiable information. We are not authorized to share that information with anyone.
Okay. And I understand there's actually big penalties if somebody were to try to do that. What would happen?
We are sworn to an oath when we are hired by the U.S. Census Bureau, and that oath is for life. If we were to violate that oath, it could mean a $250,000 fine and or 5 years of prison.
Okay. So your information is about as safe as it can get then. So what are some of the kinds of things that they ask about in the questions on the new census?
Miriam, the census is basically as simple as it could possibly get. We're kind of calling this the short census. There's only about 7 questions that are on there, and they have to do with your name, your birth date, how many people live in that household, your race or ethnicity, and then do you own or rent your property? Again, just kind of back up what Jeff said, while we collect that information, none of the personal identifiable information is carried with your overall responses. It's separated when it actually gets handed up to the executive branch in December 2020.
Okay. And this is separate. The census itself is separate from other surveys that may go out through the Census Bureau, like the American Communities Survey. And those may have other questions on economics and all kinds of things, I understand, right?
Yeah, that's correct, Miriam. The U.S. Census administers about 100 different surveys that go from everything from the economic and the report that we actually just released a few months ago to agricultural towards health. The American Community Survey is one of those that we administer, and these are throughout the year. But the 2020 decennial census, this is the only one that's administered every 10 years, and this is the one that will be used for representation in Congress and also for allocation of the $675 billion, that's with a B, for all the different states.
There you go. So if you want the potholes fixed or the homeless problem addressed, all these different things, it's important to answer the census questions when you get them. Let's talk about jobs. I know we've got a pretty high unemployment rate in parts of East County out here. And there's probably a lot of people listening who would love to know how to apply for a job. So can you tell me how many people are you hiring locally?
So currently we are hiring hundreds of people to fill our office staff in the downtown San Diego office, the Claremont Mesa office, which includes all of East County, pretty much east of the 15, as well as our Vista office. And within the county, it's going to be in the thousands of people we will be hiring to actually carry out the count next year.
Okay. And when you say carry out the count, how are they going to do that this time around? I hear there's been some changes.
The census is really, for the first time ever, relying on electronic counting, self-counting. The census will be inviting every household and every person to go online and do a self-reporting questionnaire, followed up by a mailed-in questionnaire that will be filled out and can be mailed back in.
Mm-hmm.
And for the non-response follow-up, we will actually send census takers door-to-door to the people who didn't fill out the census.
And it's mandatory to fill this out, folks. That is required. So if you don't want a census taker coming to your door, you should fill out the online version or the mail-in one. Back to the jobs. Tell us the kind of jobs that you're hiring for.
We're currently hiring clerks and office operations supervisor positions to fill our offices. We are hiring as well managers who have the skills and experience to be a manager. We will also be focusing on our recruiting staff. As I just mentioned, we're hiring thousands of people for the entire county and well over 500,000 people across the country.
Great. What is the approximate pay range for these jobs, and are they part-time or full-time?
The hours include 35 to 40 hours per week. The people we are hiring will be paid hourly anywhere from $16.50 an hour to $30 an hour, paid weekly, and the training is also paid.
Okay. If someone is working for the census as a census taker, the people who actually do go out door to door for the folks that didn't respond by email or by mail, do they work as a team or do they go by themselves? And how do you keep people safe?
We do send people out into our operations staff. They go out to do the counting individually. If there are areas we determine to be a little bit sketchy, we may put them in pairs. When we do the homeless count, for example, this will be done in teams of people and they will do a visual count. And it's usually an all-night affair
mm-hmm.
where we're doing a visual inspection of areas where we know we will encounter people without a fixed home residence.
That could be out in the riverbed or the city parks or something.
Yeah, Miriam. The one thing I do want to kind of reiterate, while we really want to count everyone once, only once, and in the right place, that's our priority. That's what we have to do. That's our objective, and that's what we're going to try and do. When you become a part of the census team, we want to make sure that you feel safe. And so we go through training to make sure you know how to kind of assess the different situations, and then we reinstill and support you with that you don't ever put yourself in a situation that you don't feel comfortable in. So the safety of our census team is first and foremost.
Very good. Now, many parts of East County are very rural and the houses are scattered, you know, pretty few and far between. How do you get to those hard to reach places?
We do require that our recruiters and as well as our field staff who are going to do the count, our enumerators must have a vehicle. So
okay.
They must be mobile. And in certain cases, we even require a four-wheel drive.
Okay. So you can't do this on a scooter, folks. It's got to be the real deal.
And the other thing, too, that's why it is so important that we get applicants from East County to go to 2020census.gov/jobs and apply, because it takes a community to count a community. And who better to know where those different riverbeds are to get across and where those different long driveways are than the community itself?
Very good. And they may actually even know a lot of the neighbors, some of these small towns. People are pretty familiar with each other. So tell us the website again. If you want to apply for a job with the census, where can people go for more information or to apply?
We recommend that you seek the website 2020census.gov/jobs.
Excellent. Now, if you do have somebody call or show up at your door, how can a member of the public make sure that that person really is from the census?
Each time we send someone out into the field or into even working in the offices, they must have a U.S. Census badge. It is a photo ID badge that proves that they are a federal employee. and they must have the badge with them at all times when conducting official census business.
Okay. And for folks who may be a little bit mistrustful of government, I know we have a lot of immigrants, for example, who've come here from places like the Middle East, where maybe police, government folks aren't necessarily friendly.
Well, as David just mentioned, it takes a community to count a community. That's why it's so important for us to recruit people from each of the communities who speak the languages that we're needing to communicate with people who don't necessarily speak English fluently, and communicate the importance of doing and taking the census.
So you need applicants who speak the various languages of the community.
That's right.
Are there any in particular that are in short supply right now?
Well, I would say we're pretty well covered with Spanish in San Diego. We have a lot of fluent Spanish speakers. Mm-hmm. There are other languages such as Tagalog, Chaldean, Arabic, and some of these other languages from our immigrant communities in and around San Diego that we will need some assistance with, of course.
I would just like to add to that. We don't want to limit anybody from applying because, first of all, it takes about 10 minutes to apply. It is so easy for these great paying jobs. And second, as we get closer and closest to census day and start to see who gets counted, you know, our needs and who we need can shift and change. So please, we just ask, don't let anybody discourage themselves from applying.
Very good. Now, on the jobs, do you have to be a U.S. citizen to apply for one of these jobs?
So I'll use the example of 10 years ago of the 700,000 employees who were hired by the federal government to work the census. About 4,000 people were non-citizens hired specifically for language skills, of which they could not find U.S. citizens who had those specific language skills.
Okay.
That has been made a possibility again for the 2020 census.
So you could be someone who's here legally? Do they need to be in the U.S. legally, just not a citizen?
They need to be a legal resident with the legal right to work, so right. A work permit or a green card.
And that's just for the jobs, but of course answering the census is something that everybody should do.
Correct.
What about people with disabilities? Are there any census jobs that they can apply for?
Yes, there are jobs in our offices. We follow, of course, and respect the EEO or Equal Employment Opportunity laws that allow for equal and fair accommodation.
Very good. If you just tuned in, listeners, we are speaking with Jeffrey Arneo and David Bennett from the U.S. Census Bureau's San Diego office. Gentlemen, I'm going to let each of you have the last word here. What else do you want to make sure listeners know, including those who may have tuned in the middle of the interview, about the 2020 census?
2020 census is a great opportunity to be counted. Everyone matters. And I just want to highlight the uniqueness of San Diego County with 17 federally recognized tribal reservations, which absolutely need to be counted as well. We have such a diverse population in San Diego, and for everyone to be counted, we need your help. So please apply at 2020census.gov/jobs.
Very good. And David, what else would you like folks to know? And maybe you can remind them again why it's important for everyone to answer the census questions.
Thank you, Miriam. I think the most important thing to understand is we only do this once in every 10 years. So if we miss counting, we'll say a 5-year-old, that child, that seat for them in kindergarten, in middle school, maybe even high school, that may not be there for them. So everybody needs to be counted. Everybody needs to be considered. And they need to know, if you're listening, the census is so important. It's funding. It's helping make our communities better. I'm from San Diego, and that's why I'm here, trying to get the word out. And it's safe. It was tested in the Supreme Court after the Patriot Act was filed, whether or not we can get specific information about different kinds of communities and whether that could be shared with FBI or CIA or ICE even. And the Supreme Court shut it down. Your answers are safe. It is so much more important that people participate. And right now, the best way to participate, go to 2020census.gov/jobs and help us count our community.
I want to thank both of you very much for taking the time to join us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Thank you, Miriam.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region. Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features Holiday Lights on Main, upcoming concerts at the Magnolia in El Cajon, North Pole Limited Holiday Train Rides in Campo, Pomegranate Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, and a Julian Country Christmas.
Plus, we have a preview of December events, including Alpine's Parade of Lights and Snow Festival, a Brotherhood of Man dance program in La Mesa, Lakeside's Spirit of Christmas on Main, Ramona's Christmas tree lighting, a European Christmas market and caroling atop Mount Helix, Santa at Santee Lakes, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, and a Paris Holiday Tea in El Cajon, and a Roaring Twenties New Year's Eve Bash at Viejas.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more. Downtown El Cajon invites you to Holiday Lights on Main this Saturday, November 30th, from 12 noon to 7 p.m. This festive event includes ice skating, Santa's Village, carnival rides, live music, and at 6 p.m., the annual tree lighting at Main at Magnolia. Shops will light up to brighten your holidays and invite you to support small businesses in the community as part of Small Business Saturday. For more information, visit downtownelcajon.com.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a variety of shows coming up in the next month. Upcoming performances include The World of Dance Live, the Danish heavy metal band King Diamond, Straight Up with Stasi Live, a 50-year tribute to the Beatles' White Album, Which One's Pink, a Pink Floyd tribute band, and Dave Koz and Friends, Gifts of the Season Christmas Tour. For tickets and the full lineup, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or The Magnolia on Facebook.
The North Pole Limited, a special holiday train ride, will run Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays between Thanksgiving and Christmas at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. Santa's elves will sing favorite Christmas carols, read a popular Christmas story to young ones, and pass out cookies and hot chocolate to all passengers. The North Pole Limited will stop at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus, who will visit with all passengers on the vintage train on our way back to the lighted Campo Depot. Advance tickets are recommended and can be purchased at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
On November 29th, November 30th, and December 1st, Pomegranate Days celebrates its ninth year at the Oasis Camel Dairy. Guests can feed camels, enjoy a camel show, ride camels, take selfie photos with camels, and savor pomegranates for sale from the family's farm orchard. You can also see a comedy magic performance by Godfrey the Magician and his magic castle, enjoy a singing bird show, and watch Turkey Stampede by Pardon Gobblers from the award-winning State Fair Traveling Turkey Race Show. Plus, you'll meet Christine Adams, author of Camel Crazy. For tickets and details, visit CamelDairy.com.
Julian Country Christmas will be held on November 30th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. with lighting of the town's huge living Christmas tree and the arrival of Santa Claus between 5:30 and 6 p.m. at Pioneer Park in front of the Julian Pioneer Museum. Visitors can also enjoy shopping at boutique shops and craft stores for one-of-a-kind gifts at this annual event hosted by the Julian Chamber of Commerce. You can find details on this event in Julian and more at visitjulian.com in the calendar section.
The 24th Annual Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights and Snow Festival is slated to light up the holiday season and delight guests of all ages on Friday, December 6th. The parade rolls out at 6:30 p.m.
at the corner of Alpine Boulevard and West Victoria Drive, ending at Tavern Road. The Snow Festival, with real snow and sledding, is at the Alpine Community Center after the parade until 9 p.m. Arrive early, since Alpine Boulevard will be closed down for the parade. Bring a chair and blanket to enjoy the lighted entries. At the Snow Festival afterwards, in addition to Snow Hill, you'll find vendors, food, music, and a visit from Santa Claus. Find details at visitalpine.org.
Visionary Dance Theater will present Brotherhood of Man at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa on December 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m. Brotherhood of Man is themed on the diversity of the male experience. The cast includes a broad spectrum of ages, races, and sexual orientations. Each dancer presents a positive male role model going through the experiences and the struggles of life. Tickets are available at visionarydancetheater.org.
The Lakeside Chamber of Commerce invites you to celebrate its 21st annual Spirit of Christmas on Main Avenue on Saturday, December 7th from 3:30 to 8:30 p.m. Santa and his elves are hard at work creating an atmosphere of an old-fashioned hometown Christmas featuring local school performances of holiday favorites, photos with Santa, food and drinks, children's activities, jumpy jumps, crafters booths, and lighting of the community Christmas tree. Find details at lakesidechamber.com.
The Ramona Chamber of Commerce hosts the 27th annual Christmas tree lighting on Saturday, December 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. Old Town Ramona will come alive with over 1,000 Ramona residents out to celebrate the holiday season. Shops will be open late and Main Street between 6th and 8th Streets will be closed to traffic. There will be sleigh rides, a classic car and motorcycle display, music, dancing, carolers, and of course, Santa. The lighting of the tree in front of the Guy B. Woodward Museum will take place at 6 p.m. Find more information at ramonachamber.com.
This year's 29th annual Christmas on Mount Helix on Saturday, December 7th, is expanding to feature European Christmas markets with local artisans from 2 to 5 p.m., followed by a family caroling sing-along from 5 to 6 p.m., and a reading of the Nativity story from 6 to 7 p.m. Free parking is available at Grossmont High School with a shuttle ride to the top of Mount Helix for the festivities. For more information, visit MountHelixPark.org with Mount spelled M-T.
Santee Lakes invites you to join Santa at the lakes on Sunday, December 8th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The festivities will feature a snow hill, carnival rides, inflatable jumps, crafts, food, character meets and greets, and Santa Claus. Get more information at SanteeLakes.com.
The La Mesa Village Association's Holiday in the Village returns to downtown La Mesa December 13th and 14th. This family-friendly event will feature a wonderland of festive holiday music and dance, food, kids' activities, live entertainment on several stages, carriage rides, merchants open late for holiday shopping, and more. This year, there will even be snow for sledding, and a return of a kids' zone with rides, jumps, and activities, plus photos with Santa. Find details at lamesavillageassociation.org.
Friends of East County Arts, Inc. cordially invites you to Paris Holiday, the theme of this year's annual holiday tea on Saturday, December 14th at 11 a.m. at Holy Trinity Parish Hall in El Cajon. Guests are encouraged to don a fancy hat to enjoy champagne, tea, scones, and desserts on fine holiday tableware. There will also be door prizes and opportunity drawings, plus entertainment, including a performance by the Valhalla High School Dance Program, one of the recipients of this year's grants. The nonprofit Friends of East County Arts has donated over $30,000 this year to support the arts locally, including schools and community organizations. For tickets, you can visit friendsofecarts.org.
To ring in 2020, Viejas Casino and Resort in Alpine is hosting a Roaring Twenties-themed New Year's Eve bash that promises to be the resort's biggest New Year's Eve celebration yet. You're invited to don your flapper dress or Gatsby getup, then choose a package tailored to fit your budget. Festivities will span the ballrooms, pool bar, park, and beyond. For more information, visit viejas.com and click on the Entertainment tab.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County!
Jimmy Johnson, who made history after winning 7 NASCAR Sprint Championships, has announced he is on track to retire next year. A native of East County, Johnson posted a video on his Twitter feed to announce his final season after 18 years of racing in NASCAR. In the video, he states, "I showed up chasing a dream and achieved more than I ever thought possible. I'm looking forward to next season and celebrating what will be my last year as a full-time NASCAR Cup driver. I know what this team is capable of, and I hope 2020 is one of the best yet." Johnson is currently tied for all-time wins in NASCAR's top level at 7, along with Dale Earnhardt and Richard Petty, both members of the NASCAR Hall of Fame's inaugural class. At age 44, Johnson is also tied for 6th on NASCAR's all-time win list, his 83 victories equaling the total of Cale Yarborough. Jimmy Johnson is also a philanthropist who has been hailed as a hometown hero. The Jimmy Johnson Foundation has given away over $11.5 million through its Champion Grants program, dedicated to helping children, families, and communities in need. The foundation grants have included millions donated to local schools in El Cajon and Santee, where Johnson grew up. The foundation also worked with Habitat for Humanity to build 4 homes in El Cajon. He's been honored at the White House and had Jimmy Johnson Day proclamations declared by El Cajon and by county supervisors in the past. Johnson began his racing career in the Santee sand pits and took up dirt biking before auto racing, backed by his longtime sponsor, Lowe's Home Improvement Stores. He also returned through the years to meet his fans, including a rally at Lowe's in Santee in 2009, where then-Mayor Randy Vopel presented Johnson with honorary keys to the city, quipping that he might raise the speed limit just for Johnson. Supervisor Diane Jacob summed up Johnson's legacy as a champion at that event, stating, "Besides the greatness you've achieved, you've given back to your community. You haven't forgotten your roots." Johnson hopes to win his 8th and last NASCAR title before he races into history at the end of his final season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Adventure 16, known by its active outdoor customers as A16, is closing down its last 2 stores in San Diego and West Los Angeles. The 57-year-old company is one of the oldest retailers in the outdoor industry, and it all started in a garage in La Mesa back in 1962 by members of a Boy Scout Explorer post who were passionate about high adventure. Some of the adult advisors to those scouts were aerospace engineers at local aircraft plants Roar and Convair, and were also avid backpackers. Using state-of-the-art aircraft-grade aluminum alloy tubing and other high-tech materials of the time, they invented and manufactured lightweight, high-quality backing equipment that helped revolutionize the sport. Although the company started as a manufacturer, by the mid-2000s, the employee-owned company operated 7 stores, an online store, a wholesale distribution business, a guide service, and its own nonprofit, Donate a Pack Foundation. A16 CEO John D. Mead, who has been with the company since 1970, says, "We're proud to be employee-owned and to have run a foundation that, with the help of our customers, put tens of thousands of pieces of gear into the hands and onto the backs of adventurous, underserved youth throughout Southern California. So we've seen a lot, learned a lot, made a lot of friends, and hopefully we did some good along the trail. It's certainly been an enjoyable and rewarding journey and a great run in the sun." But he reflects, times change. He notes that big box stores and online shopping, including direct sales by manufacturers, have all outpaced traditional specialty stores like A16. So he concludes, "We fought the good fight, and now it's time for us to strike camp and move on." Adventure 16 is holding a going out of business sale starting on Black Friday with its outdoor equipment and clothing. A week later, on December 7th, the company will start selling off its rental gear and store fixtures, including a large collection of vintage and antique props. Mead says, "We'll throw in the kitchen sink if someone wants to buy it. We're determined to make the best of a sad situation. So expect to see us working hard with our heads held high, serving our customers and still making new friends with smiles on our faces right up until the end." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fistier with our Green Scene Report. Kitchen fat, oil, and grease left over from daily cooking or deep frying a Thanksgiving turkey can be recycled. ETCO has a free, safe, and environmentally friendly option for disposing of household kitchen fat, oil, and grease, also known as FOG. Residents are asked to simply collect used discarded FOG in a leak-proof container and drop it off free of charge at ETCO's conveniently located buyback center. It will then be processed, filtered, and converted into biofuel by a third-party processor. Be sure not to mix your kitchen oil and grease with any other oils, such as motor oil. You can take your used kitchen fat, oil, and grease to any recycling or buyback center, including locations in La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Fallbrook, and San Marcos. For addresses, hours, and more information, you can visit edcodisposal.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fistier with our Green Scene Report. Kitchen fat, oil, and grease left over from daily cooking or deep frying a Thanksgiving turkey can be recycled. ETCO has a free, safe, and environmentally friendly option for disposing of household kitchen fat, oil, and grease, also known as FOG. Residents are asked to simply collect used discarded FOG in a leak-proof container and drop it off free of charge at ETCO's conveniently located buyback center. It will then be processed, filtered, and converted into biofuel by a third-party processor. Be sure not to mix your kitchen oil and grease with any other oils, such as motor oil. You can take your used kitchen fat, oil, and grease to any recycling or buyback center, including locations in La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Fallbrook, and San Marcos. For addresses, hours, and more information, you can visit edcodisposal.com.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world. This is Gene Carpenter with a People Power Report. You're invited to make a difference this holiday season for children of military personnel living in military housing in La Mesa. The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce is hosting a toy drive for the children ages 2 through 13 on Wednesday, December 4th at BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Grossmont Center at 5:30 p.m. Mary England, President and CEO of the La Mesa Chamber, says the Chamber is honored to be a part of this endeavor and making a difference in the lives of these children and their families that do so much for our country. Guests are encouraged to bring a new unwrapped toy to the event. Tickets are available at the La Mesa Chamber's website. If you can't attend but would like to donate, gifts including toys and diapers may be dropped off at the La Mesa Chamber's office weekdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
East County Magazine has compiled some important holiday safety tips for you with help from Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, our Chief's Corner columnist. T.
'Tis the season for hanging holiday decorations. One of the most common causes of holiday time house fires results from those bulbs being too close to gutters filled with dried out leaves. Make sure that strings of lights you're using outside have built-in fuses on the lines. Check the plug and be sure you're using lights designated for outdoor use only. Use Christmas lights and electric equipment that have been tested and verified by a reliable testing laboratory. If you have a string of lights with a blown bulb, be sure to replace it with a bulb of the same wattage. Avoid using nails, tacks, or metal staples to secure your outdoor Christmas lights. Instead, use insulated hooks. Be sure your lights are strung tightly to avoid damage from the wind. Use only outdoor rated extension cords. Connect no more than 3 strings of lights to a single extension cord, and all plugs should be plugged into a GFCI protected outlet when used outdoors. Now, if you're using a ladder to put your holiday decorations up, be careful. Don't place the ladder in a muddy location. Watch for overhead wires. When climbing the ladder, use caution and have someone secure the ladder for you. Also, be sure to replace any cords that are worn or frayed, or decorations that are broken or rusted. Never put candles near your Christmas tree or other holiday decorations. Run tree lights only when you are home, and don't turn on the tree lights if your tree has become too dry at the end of the season. It's also a good idea to place your tree and other holiday decorations a safe distance away from the fireplace. Always put safety first to assure a happy holiday season. You can get more safety tips by visiting the Chief's Corner column at our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
If you're purchasing an artificial holiday tree, look for the label fire resistant. When purchasing a live tree, be sure to check for freshness. When setting up the tree at home, keep it away from fireplaces and radiators. Heated rooms dry live trees out rapidly, so be sure to keep the stand filled with water and use only lights that have been tested for safety by a recognized testing laboratory. Check each set of lights, new and old, for broken or cracked sockets, frayed or bare wires, and throw out any damaged sets. Replace burned out bulbs promptly with the same wattage. Use no more than 3 standard size sets of lights for each single extension cord. Don't use electric lights on a metallic tree. The tree could become charged with electricity from faulty lights, and a person touching a branch could actually be electrocuted. Turn off all lights when you go to bed or leave the house. The lights could short out and start a fire. Never use lighted candles on a tree. In homes with small children, take special care to avoid sharp or breakable decorations. Keep ornaments with small removable parts out of the reach of children or pets. And don't use tree preservatives if you have pets or small children, because drinking the water could be toxic. Happy holidays and stay safe.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.